Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show.
Yeah, shot Chicago sports for sure.
Afternoons on the Score.
To left field. Eloy is back to the warning track. Eloy goes up. Oh, Eloy brought it in. Eloy Jimenez reels in the ball and left.
And he's okay.
And he's okay. How about that play? Listen to the crowd for him.
Lucas giving him a hats off salutation.
Game on!
Yeah, game on.
And Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams can breathe again. Boston Latin School, where Packy Naughton went to, had a bunch of signees of the Declaration of Independence. Packy Naughton, who was cut by the junior varsity team at Boston Latin, and he might have thought, well, I'm never going to be able to sign the Declaration of Independence like these guys, Robert Treat Payne and William Hooper.
Sam Adams went on to make a nice beer.
He did. Fantastic at what he does. I heard, actually, during his playing career, he had some great hops.
Yeah. Oh, rim shot!
That's terrific. What's the matter? Lighten up.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show. Afternoons on the Score.
Oh, I missed the hops last night. Thank you to Chris Tannehill. And we love Tanny's work. That's Tony Braxton's Breathe Again. And if you feel like that Eloy Jimenez catch highlight was a little bit louder than it actually was last night, I'm pretty sure Tanny went to the old sound effects vault and chose a closet full of stuff, empties itself onto the floor. Oh, yeah, track 7. Let me add that in to the Eloy Jimenez catch. It's Parkins and Spiegel on the Score in the missing Parkins formation. Spieg solo. And a pleasure to bring in right now on the hotline. It is the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Jason Benetti, who joins us fresh off that exciting White Sox winner. Hello, Jason.
Hi, Matt Spiegel. How are you?
I am good. Do you think Eloy was lying there on the warning track, milking that just a little bit for all of us at home and in the stands, too?
He unquestionably was. I looked at him. I looked at the monitor. I thought, oh, gosh, I don't know what I'm going to say this time around. And then he got up. It was almost, there was like a little bit of the Undertaker there, you know, like he'd catch a clothesline and then he'd go down. And then like there he was while everybody else was facing the crowd. And it was, you know, there was no gong that played, but it was close. Yeah. And I'm really happy he got up and he had that smile on his face. I just like, thank you. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Hansel Robles is here now.
He did have that smile on his face. He's a very playful dude, but that was a little bit mean-spirited on that front. I think he's done a remarkable job. Other than that moment, I can't recall another where I was afraid for his body. Like, and he's had opportunities to go near the wall. One time he was near the net and he stopped short. Like, he's, I think that's the only time I've been fearful. Do you remember another one?
I don't. I remember a couple times, the times you're talking about where he slowed down, and clearly the message has gotten across. That time, he had a very distinct play. And he went and he made the play, and he didn't do more with his body than he had to. So, you know, I got a sense that there was a more controlled version of him there in left field since he's come back. And I like, that was a really nice play. Had spring training never happened and the stuff from previous years never happened, we would have been like, oh, that's a nice play. And I'm sure he's fine. But now he gets down on the ground, and you're like, okay, this is horrible. Please stop.
What do you do with the small sample that says he hits better when he's out there, mixed with the view that you have of him enjoying every facet of the game and interacting with the fans out there too? Like, it's hard for me not to put those together, math, you know, and not just depend on the math for the thought.
Yeah, I don't do it with the math in that circumstance necessarily. I've just, over the course of my time in the minors and majors, there are some people who really just are not good at DHing. They just never figure out how to DH. And I, you know, I'm not a baseball truism guy, but I do believe there's something to that for people who just don't like to stir. They don't like to sit, and they want to be part of the game. And it's like, it's very difficult for them to stay engaged in the whole proceeding. So I do get that for some people. I wonder over the course of his career if that will actually bear out numerically. There's also the fact that some people think they're better when they play the outfield rather than DH, and then you look and their numbers are very similar.
That's interesting. But there could also be that somebody thinks they're better when they play the field and then they DH, and then that drives them for whatever reason to be more comfortable and focused and then play better when they're in the outfield, right?
Yeah, there's the placebo version of that, right? There's the, okay, now I'm really in it, now I'm doing it, and then they do, yes, get better necessarily. So I think at this point it's not really worth it to evaluate, because I just there's not enough data on it, and I would say quite often it's worth it to listen to the player. But also, like, I was talking to Kevin Cash for a game a couple weeks ago, and he was talking about his bench and these guys that play 4 out of 7 days, 5 out of 7 days, even a Rosarena doesn't start sometimes against right-handers, and he's like, they don't like it, but they get it. And so, I think there are some places that really listen to the players and some places that don't. And is it better for the team? I don't know how it all bears out. I think every situation is individual in that case. But I do think there are players who just don't DH well. They just don't.
Yeah, it makes sense. Some people just don't like the stillness. It's we know people like that. This team is so loaded with stories everywhere. It's like each person seems to have, like, you know, their personal evolution is freaking fascinating. Give me some of your favorite storylines along that way that you think don't get enough shine. You know, like you know these people well, and you know their origin stories. What are a couple that don't get enough shine on a very interesting team?
Oh, that's a really interesting question, because there are a lot of them.
Right?
I think Dylan Cease's symbiotic relationship with Ethan Katz, that knowing what I knew of Ethan coming in and then knowing Dylan like I knew him, I thought it was a really good match of two pretty cerebral guys who like very directed, focused practice. And I think Dylan Cease, even though there are still some wonky moments, his evolution into possible top 10 pitcher in the American League is a really impressive one, and we're still on the surface of that changeup that he throws. I think Yoan Moncada, like, I mention it every once in a while because it just sort of strikes me, he was in really bad shape last year, like really bad shape. I love how, like, wonky his line is this year, and you look at weighted runs created plus and, like, his value compared to Abreu, and they're fairly similar, even though the big RBI numbers on one side, Moncada's holding his own. Grandal coming back from the knee thing that he had, not only that put him on the IL, but earlier this year, I mean, you talk about knowing your body, this guy, like, told Stoney and me that he basically was going to start to click because his knee was feeling better, and then went out and banged a bunch of homers a couple days later after the post-game interview. And I was like, whoa. Usually people say, like, ah, I'm getting back into shape, and you see it at some point. He did it, like, tomorrow, which was kind of fun. I think Aaron Bummer is a really interesting cat, and Sox fans are so tired of me saying it. Aaron Bummer has been unbelievably unlucky this year with really crappy ground balls that people have hit. You look at the anatomy of innings where he's given up runs. I know, like, throw first pitch strikes and all that stuff. I think he's extraordinarily trustworthy in the playoffs. I think he will do very well for this team. And I've said this a couple times, and I don't even know if he's going to be on the postseason roster this year. I think Gavin Sheets' bat is going to have big playoff hits for the Sox in the coming seasons. I just do. I don't know why. I just do.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. The swing is so beautiful. His composure is so clear. His willingness to do whatever the hell he's got to do to make the majors and get here. I mean, like, his story of, like, you know, I should probably add outfield, and using quarantine to add outfield to a 24-year-old's baseball life. It's just, they're loaded.
Yeah.
They're loaded with stuff like that.
Like, he needs to figure out how to play outfield, and he's like, oh, I need somebody to, like, hit some fly balls to me. Let me go into my phone and go under C and click on Cal Ripken Jr. And you're like, oh, okay,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
Like, I probably would have called, like, my uncle or my dad. Like, I, you know, but he called Cal Ripken Jr. And he's just so, you're right, he's so composed. He just absolutely is completely comfortable in a Major League Baseball uniform and batter's box and clubhouse. There's no tinge of worry that he's doing it wrong. He already walks with the confidence of a person who knows that he's doing it right. And I think in part because he has, like, he has an understanding of what the game means viscerally to so many people and what it means to him as a person and his family. I just think it's a really grounded family, and that helps him on the diamond.
Yeah, it's true. And not everybody who grows up the son of a big leaguer ends up like that. You know, I mentioned the word composure, and we're talking Jason Benetti about the White Sox and more. It's kind of beautiful that a guy who has been so open about mental health and his struggles with it in Michael Kopech is also showing you tremendous mental toughness and composure during this season, toggling back and forth between roles, now recovering from some failure in the bullpen role and figuring himself out and becoming trustworthy in big, big moments. It's kind of beautiful that that's happening for him.
I agree. When he got beaten up in Toronto, I thought the next couple outings are going to be really important for that young man. Because, as you said, he's been very vocal and open about what last year meant to him and all of that, and the need for stepping away. And I appreciate the fact that he now knows where to go to make sure that it doesn't snowball and ripple. And I think that is the toughest thing to do in a Major League Baseball season, is not watch your star fall in front of your very eyes and try to grab onto it and have it slip through your hands. He just calmly said, nope, I've got this, and then did what he does again. And I appreciate that because I think it's extraordinarily difficult.
The Chicago Magazine piece on our friend Jason Benetti is just beautiful. It seemed like Peter Sagal really got you, and he mentions in it that you guys are friendly. And it's like, it's one thing to have, like, hey, there's a great profile and Jason is awesome and here's why he's awesome. There's another to, like, weave the humanity into it and actually have it be something you can learn from. And I thought that was beautiful. It came through there. Your passion for the job and the prep comes through there. That passion needs to be nurtured and protected, I would guess, or at least fed. Are you conscious of trying to make sure that that passion for the work part of it remains for you?
That will always remain. Just being honest, I'm grateful that Peter wrote that, because there are a lot of friends of mine that don't know that, like, sometimes when you get treated differently over and over again, over and over again that, like, there's anger you got to deal with. I'm like, I'm a pretty nice, happy person at the core. But there's also, like, 38 years worth of stuff that reminds me that people, when they meet me for the first time, like, they might think I'm a pushover or not want to lose to me or, like, anything in between other than a normal reaction. And I just, like, all I would hope, like, I don't want excuses for my anger because that's BS too. But, like, I just, it's, I just hope people who are different read that and maybe think, like, it's okay to be a whole person instead of just, like, inspirational at every moment. Because, like, you know, there are some bad days. Like, I've been really vocal about the not traveling stuff this year. That's really frustrating to not be able to do my job and to not feel like anybody listens sometimes. And, you know, it's because I love what I do. And it has done a lot for my career, as have the White Sox and ESPN. And I guess what I would say is it's nice to have people know that, like, I make mistakes. I've been mad sometimes. I wasn't a great friend. Like, that's what the journey's for. And when you talk about the players on the White Sox, that's why I love somebody like Lucas Giolito, who went and remade himself. That's why I love Carlos Rodon, who got that big, like, sort of – double bird moment that he could flip to everybody who didn't want to sign him when he got the no-hitter. Like, people who remake themselves and basically give a little backhand slap to the people who said, "Ah, there's a ceiling." I love that stuff. I love it so much, and I think that's why I love baseball as I talk it out with you.
It's interesting. And Jason took it to the depth of the piece, which deals with the anger that was in there from being minimized, from being, the expectations being low for visual reasons and surface reasons. Is there anything, why do you think it ended up being this particular vocation in regards to the anger? If there is a reason, like, I'm fascinated by this, how whatever our issues are, our malfunctions or dysfunctions or whatever they are, how we channel them into our work, sometimes even unconsciously, we end up doing it. You know, I wonder if there's some unconscious reason that this ended up being where you ended up.
Yeah, it's kind of wild to think about. I mean, it's in part because literally, like, I wasn't joking in the piece. Like, somebody told me I was good at it, and not a whole lot of people told me, other than my parents told me I was good at something, right? Except for, like, getting a report card. And so somebody told me I was good at it, and then I felt like there were no inhibitions, and so, like, I liked doing it. And then I kind of got addicted to the idea that every other, like, the next game you can just do better. Like, that's why the minors was fun for me, is because the next day the tape can be better. And, like, you can dress me up in whatever tuxedo you want, I'm still gonna walk funny, but on the air I can incrementally get better. And then you pile all those things up, and no matter what you look like, if you're good at the job, somebody's gonna hire you. And Seinfeld says that about comedy, that you get laughs, they put you on stage. You don't, they don't. And I love that. Like, there's a great equalizer in, hey, if I perform well enough, then maybe they will hire me. I mean, there, you know, a lot of people say really dumb things to me still in positions that you wouldn't expect. But then the work goes on TV, and it's like, well, maybe I was wrong. Maybe I shouldn't have said that about him. Like, you know. Maybe, like, it's a way for me to get treated better, which is ridiculous, but I also love it dearly because I love being able to tell the stories of guys who were in A-ball for, you know, like Danny Mendick, right? Like, Danny Mendick, when he was in A-ball, they called him up to Charlotte because they literally needed a body, so he got in a car and drove from Winston-Salem to Charlotte because he was in the neighborhood, and then he ends up being a big leaguer, and I think that's glorious.
Yeah, it is glorious. That is. Man, as you say that, of people, like, asking you stupid things, I always think of one that I did. I don't think I've ever brought this up to you. The first time I ever invited you to come into studio, and you did on a Sunday morning for Hit and Run, I remember asking you on the phone, like, Do I need to do anything to help you get from, you know, once you get in the elevator? Like, I was so stupid, or just, you know, I didn't understand. Like, I thought maybe I was going to have to, like, bring a golf cart or something. I'm embarrassed that I thought that.
But,
like,
oh, dude.
But you have, but that, those kind of things still happen every once in a while, to your point, right?
It's more than that. I mean, it's more than that. Like, I had an executive on a conference call about, 9 months ago yell the phrase, be a man at me. And I just don't think that person would do that to any other announcer in the city or nationally. And, like, I, you know, sometimes people think they can push me around because I, you know, they're, it's absolutely true that people infantilize people with disabilities. Hmm. They treat them like they're younger than they actually are. So it's like, oh, he's my kid or whatever. And so they, like, get aggressive in that way because they like to, they think that they can, like, push that person around.
Hmm.
And living a life where you're always comparing your interactions to other people's is generally really horribly toxic. So I don't love thinking about it, but it's hard not to when you see somebody else get treated a totally different way when, you know, they're sitting in another chair down the road or next to you or whatever.
Yeah, well, I love that you realized you got to a place where the quality of work on the ball game is irrefutable. You know, it's like it has.
That's it. It's
absolutely the bottom line. It is the star. The quality of work becomes what it's about. And you always have another game. That's beautiful. And you say Seinfeld. We talked about this exact thing with Norm MacDonald yesterday on this show, that Norm was relentlessly about the comedy, was about, like, look, if it's funny, I'm doing it, and I don't care what the ramifications are. I am serving the comedy. And that is, as if you live by that ethos, look at the respect you end up with if you actually serve the quality of the product.
Hey, I don't know if Tanny told, did Tanny tell you I ran into Norm MacDonald last year in, like, February?
He told me, but I don't know the story, and I was hoping we'd get here, so I'm ready.
Okay, all right, so it was like early February. I'd done an Ohio State basketball game with Robbie Hummel. I'm sitting at Eddie George's in the Columbus airport. And Robbie and the producer, Bart Fox, had left. So I'm sitting at the table alone. And in comes Norm MacDonald. And he's got a couple people with him. And they sit at the table right next to me. And we get to talking. And I'm starstruck because I think Norm's one of the funniest people ever, ever, ever. And he turns to me. He goes, hey, they still caning people in Singapore? And I said, what? He goes, yeah, I remember that kid Michael Fay?
Wow.
And I was like, yeah. He goes, yeah, they caned him in Singapore. I go, yeah, I don't know. He goes, why? I got a nephew who's a little weird who just moved to Singapore. You think they'll cane him? And I was like, I was really sad yesterday because I think he's funny as all get out. But I still don't know if it was a bit, Fiend. I still don't know if it was a bit.
I love that he thought you might know. Why did he think you might know, Jason?
I don't know. I don't look like I'm like a Singapore statute book. Hey, they still caning people?
hang on. Let me look that up, Norm. Hang on here one second. Oh, God.
Well, last time it used to be 22 Singapore 1565, so let me see if that's still in the code.
Long-time Singapore statutes guy, Jason Benetti. Jason, you're the best.
I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe, and he was so gracious to everybody. He was so nice, but he just, you know, it was the same delivery of the Better Than Ezra joke, right?
Yep.
Like, it was so, so good.
Oh, God. Just a delightful man and a delightful talent. As are you. Look at that. I segued right from Norm back to you. Right there. Keep
Norm.
Doing. Yeah. Keep rolling. You know, I love how curious you are I love how wide your knowledge is and how relentless your interests are. And I told this story in transition of the one time I was texting you about something and you didn't get back for a while. And you said, sorry, I was doing a lacrosse game. And I'm like, Benetti, who does all this stuff, was doing a lacrosse game. And you said, I have an affinity for the sport. Like, you know, you're allowed to do stuff.
Did I say that?
Yes, you did. You're like, I have an affinity for the game.
Wait, am I Niles from Frasier now? Do I text like Niles?
Apparently, or we enjoy words. You know, I like fancy words, so you gave me affinity, which was nice. Yeah,
yeah. I think I'm gonna go get like a brandy or something. Get like a snifter of brandy now.
Yes, yes. Swirl that, please. Smoking jacket, not optional. Benetti, you've earned it. Enjoy your evening.
Thanks,
and love to talk to you as always. Thank you, Jason.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank you. It's Jason Benetti, a man who is truly willing to be fully open and helpful. And really, I think he's helpful mostly just by being fully open. Sometimes it's all it takes. Love that. Later in the hour, Mark Grody will be here. Did you hear that Nagy, Matt, had a coach, an assistant of his, who some are thinking bus-tossed him earlier today? You'll hear that stuff along with Mark Grody coming up at 4:40, right here on 670 The Score.
Bilal, you there? All right, man.
Once I talked to Bilal Nichols, and it was a really enjoyable conversation, and then we realized that by the end of the conversation, he wasn't there anymore. Bears PR had pulled him away to go do some other media stuff. And that's me asking Bilal if he was around. He's not around. It's interesting. I was going to talk about the defensive line because the Bengals are coming to town and their defensive line is seriously good. And it's not Carlos Dunlap and Geno Atkins. It's not that era of Bengals defensive line. But who they have are very, very good, and they're very well paid. Because over the last year, year and a half, they've paid them all. Trey Hendrickson is making $15 million. These are the cap hits. DJ Reader, I think these are the cap hits. Either way, $14 million. Sam Hubbard, $10 million, among others. So they've got a very expensive defensive front. And as I was reading about them here on a Turn the Page Wednesday, as we kind of segue with a few things from last week's Bears game, but a few things from this upcoming Bears game, this piece in The Athletic talked about how the Bengals are seventh in the NFL in terms of cap space spent on the defensive line. Okay? So they're seventh in the NFL in terms of cap space spent on the defensive line. If you're spending a lot of cap money on a certain part of your team, it better perform. This is, of course, true in any sport, but certainly the NFL, the defensive line needs to show up. And it did. It was great against the Vikings. Super disruptive. In Kirk Cousins' grill the whole afternoon. And just all those guys have good motors, and they just kept going and kept going. So the Bengals are seventh. Anybody like to guess who's first in money, cap money spent on the defensive front in all of the NFL? Second are the Arizona Cardinals. Third are the Eagles. Fourth are the Chiefs. Fifth are the Ravens. Sixth are the Bills. Number one, the Chicago Bears with $59.1 million in terms of a cap hit on the front. That obviously is Khalil Mack and Akeem Hicks and Eddie Goldman, among others. So, number one, that means you need to be super duper productive with the defensive line. And through week one, not so much. Mark Grody was there today. Lots of Bears folks talked, including an assistant coach who said some stuff that's being read as a bus toss. I need to hear it and hear the tone. We will. Coming up next on 670 The Score.
Here's the man that you fear most in football staring you right in the face.
Mark Grody.
I call him a maniac. Stone maniac.
Covering the Bears for 670 The Score.
You had to overcome the mystique. It was almost like an odor. He exuded a kind of a presence.
Sideline reporter for Bears Radio, WBBM.
His whole damn life was football. Wasn't driving a pretty car. Wasn't going to the local bar pounding your chest, I'm the greatest, was the opposite.
Mark Grody.
He was Moby Dick in a goldfish bowl.
Mark Grody with Parkins and Spiegel on 670 The Score.
Mark Grody is here, our Bears insider. And Mark, I appreciate you. I enjoy you. It's good to see you.
Good to see you too, man. Good to see practice today. And when I was watching Bears practice today, I saw number 91, Eddie Goldman, out there stretching with a helmet on, which means he did practice today in a limited capacity. Same for number 71, Jason Peters.
Yeah, those are the big news, those two big uglies right there. Jason Peters practiced in a limited capability. So you think he might make the second half this week?
We'll see. We'll see. Yeah, those are the questions that we should really be asking. Not how many snaps Justin Fields is going to get. How many snaps will Jason Peters get? Will Larry Borum, by the way, still did not practice.
See, that I'm bummed about that. Because yeah. Larry Borum had 9 snaps. There were no pressures on his 9 snaps.
Yeah, and he's been nothing but, like, impressive. Like, I don't know if he's good yet, but he's passed every single test and every scenario in which he has been placed, except for staying healthy, which I guess is a legit test at this level. So it's, yeah, I think that's the bigger bummer than anything right now as far as the Bears are concerned injury-wise. Yeah.
All right, well, good to have Goldman back, obviously, and we'll see about Peters here on a Wednesday. But let's get to Bill Lazor. There's quotes circulating that I want to reference with you before we get to some of the other stuff. So people had asked Lazor, is Justin Fields ready for a full series? Do you think he can handle a full series? And Lazor said, I would have said after the preseason that he's moving quickly and ready for whatever's thrown at him. So I don't think anything's changed. Next question. If he's ready for it, then why isn't he getting those additional chances? Lazor, I think Matt has probably addressed what his philosophy is on the quarterback position. I don't think that's any different. I don't think there's any reason for me to answer that. So that sounds like a guy not wanting to answer because Matt is in charge and it's Matt's gig, and I get that. But the first part where he says, I would have said after the preseason, moving quickly and ready for whatever's thrown at him. Sounds like Bill Lazor might disagree with Matt Nagy about Justin Fields' readiness.
I love the idea of that. I love a good old-fashioned bus toss. I did not perceive it that way. I did not.
Even if it's not a bus toss, couldn't it just be a coaching disagreement that he tries to elegantly?
I don't know. I mean, you could be right. I'm going to still say no on this one because I think that when you read the quote, whatever he's ready for whatever's thrown at him. So I think that in as the antithesis, I think it's him, Lazor, agreeing with Matt Nagy that whatever, I think he's saying whatever Matt Nagy throws at him, whatever Matt Nagy throws at him, he is ready for. That's the way I perceived it and seeing his face and studying his tone. And then especially at the end, the end really was not even close to anything egregious where he said, look, these aren't my decisions. I think you'll have to ask Matt about that. That's up to him to decide and decipher. And that's the whole thing. Bill Lazor, he ain't calling the plays. And he even mentioned that during, as we know, Bill Lazor did call the plays at once. He is not calling the plays, but I didn't see it that way. I don't know if some of the other reporters out there saw it that way. I did not. And I always think that the offensive coordinators on Matt Nagy's watch have always been in a complicated spot. Remember Mark Helfrich? Helfrich would get up there and he was the straight shooter of the bunch. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And some people did perceive that at times as, I don't know, bus tossing is a strong word, but undercutting or going off the company line a little bit. Some of that seemed to occur with Mark Helfrich, but these are guys who, they're not calling the plays. So when Bill Lazor
They're not calling the shots. It's not even about calling the plays. It's like calling for positional usage. But like opinions on quarterbacks are so, and young quarterbacks playing are so widely disparate around the league that I would be shocked if there isn't a staffer on this staff thinks Justin Fields should be playing. You know what I mean?
That is possible. That is absolutely possible.
It's not a bus toss to say that.
No, you're right. And maybe even Lazor feels that way. I don't think that these comments connoted that specifically today. I really don't. And the thing about Lazor, too, that people should know is when he gets up there, like, even when he took, well, he didn't take, when he was handed play calling last year, he was so careful to continue to respect Matt Nagy,
sure,
and not take complete ownership of it. And he is like that every time he gets up there. He is there to respect the company line and to make sure that everybody knows that Matt Nagy is the boss. So I disagree, okay, with a lot of people who are probably agreeing with you, actually.
Okay. Tell me about what Lazor said in terms of the limited offense, because getting the ball out quick in 2.1 seconds and not going down the field, some stuff was very frustrating.
Okay, so now you can read into something that Bill Lazor said, because I want you guys to pay attention to the pause that is about to occur. Bill Lazor on the challenges that the O-line injuries are causing.
Coach Lazor, how much are you having to curtail what you do offensively around the state of your offensive line?
We did address it fairly well last week. Same question, but I'll do it again. I think that's what you do, is you every year, every week, every game, you look at your players. What's the best thing for them to do? How do we put them in the best situation to be successful? And that's football. That's coaching. So it's a trick question.
Well, you had two guys go down, though, in the game.
Yeah.
It's different than last week. So just as far as in that game, we saw a lot of short passes, and I have to imagine.
I thought Elijah did an excellent job. I don't – as you know, I was not calling the plays, but I can speak, I think, for the staff to say that Elijah being in the game had zero effect, as far as I can speak, of what we did. I thought he handled himself great.
Man, I'm sorry, but the whole tone of it sounds very awkward.
How about the pause?
The pause, yeah. And then I wasn't calling the plays, as you know.
Yeah.
We have.
So now you can read into same. And by the way, that was the reporter there, and this is an interesting tie. Stacey Dale's NFL Network asking the questions, and he said, we did this last week, and then he called her question a trick question. The person who asked the question last week was me. And Bill Lazor also answered the question to me and also said to me, that's a trick question. So she got to, and I'm like, wait a minute, I don't have trick. I didn't know I had trick questions. Wow. I'm not here trying to play trick or treat here. So,
hey, Groats, throwing a left turn at you. There's a little more Lazor on Fields from the Rams game that I wanted to hear. Just
okay.
I want to hear more of his tone right here. I'm finding this compelling.
You want to be right here. You don't want me to be right,
hey,
do
I'm,
you?
I'm not Parkins. That's not how this works.
You're
this
right.
Is not, you're not. This is not a competition for who's right. We're okay.
Okay.
Small sample size, but the five snaps that Justin was out there, what's your sense for what he gained out of those?
Well, I think probably some stuff internally that I would have a hard time judging. I think from the outside looking at it, he looked like he belonged. He looked like he could be successful. Nothing was too big for him, which we didn't think it would be, but looked like he had fun.
Okay, so
does that any of that sound like he is like going over Matt Nagy's head or saying things?
Entire thing is him. We read into it because he's obviously trying to be careful and politically correct,
of course,
and respectful.
I love that we read into it. I am in this case, and I hate to be the party pooper here. In this case, I am not buying into the deep read on this.
Understood.
Yeah.
What else you got, Groats? What else you want to get to, sir?
You know what? We should get to the defense, because that was, as much as we want everything else to be the story, offense and quarterbacks, the defense was the story. So let's get into Sean Desai, the Bears defensive coordinator, took the podium today, and on Eddie Jackson and Tashaun Gipson whiffing on Van Jefferson. All they did to do was touch him.
What were you thinking at the moment Van Jefferson goes down and safeties touching?
Yeah, you know, probably similar to what you guys were thinking. You know, what happened? Did they touch him or not? And obviously they didn't touch him. And so at that point, I mean, it's like everybody else. I mean, what are you going to do? You can't take that play back, right? So we got to get ready to go play the next play and fix those errors.
There's been a lot of talk from players, coaches, about accountability since you've taken over. When it's two veteran safeties who failed to touch a guy, simple play, how do you hold two veterans accountable? I mean,
no, you do it the same way you hold anybody accountable. The accountability standard doesn't change by years measured in the league. You know, our standard is the standard, and so everybody's held accountable to the same standard, regardless of your years and regardless of even me. I'm held to that same standard.
I'm just curious with regard to your manner. Is it more parental, or do you get angry at the two guys?
I mean, you're a parent, right? You got to pick and choose your battles of when you're getting angry and when you're being more parental, and that's the same way here.
Here's something eye-opening to Matt about, and that was Sean Desai. He and as far as the tackling issues that exist for the Bears existed and have existed, he said he counted 8 plays that he graded as missed tackles on a total of 12 missed tackles, which meant that on one play, at least, there had to be 4 or 5 missed tackles.
Yeah, and I think he got specific about the play. It was the third down pass to Kupp.
Yes.
When Eddie missed the tackle first but was not alone on the missed tackle. There.
Yeah, yeah. And, there is no great answer in terms of what he told us about tackling other than do what I tell you to do more, do it better.
Does Nagy express anger? I think it was Potash like asking like, are you more parental or are you angry or whatever? Does Nagy, because I feel like that's missing, like Fangio did, right? Vic was a barker.
Right.
Desai
is very vocal, like watching him practice. I mean, he's not like a shrinking violet by any means, but he's not like at least we haven't seen it. Like I didn't see it in camp, but very animated at times, very vocal. And same for Matt Nagy. I mean, you get the nice guy version of him, but he is very authoritative out there. And the thing about Matt Nagy is that he's always been very convincing. You know what I mean? We don't know if he's going to be a successful coach with the Bears, but the tone in which he speaks, the words he uses, it all sounds good, even if there's not a lot of meaning behind it at times.
Allen Robinson not used a whole lot in that game, and that's one thing that whoever's quarterbacking will have to lean on. You're paying the guy a lot of money, use him, go.
Yeah, 6 catches, 35 yards, a long of 9. Here's Allen Robinson.
Is it frustrating for you in that game when you can't create those big plays that you're used to creating?
At the same time, I won't say frustrating, because I think as anybody, if you don't help contribute to a win, then once you kind of go back and look at the tape, you aren't happy with your own performance. Or, and as me being a leader on this offense, obviously for myself, when I look back at a game like that, not being able to really, whether if it's myself not being able to come away with plays or whatever the case may be able to really help contribute to us, being able to get a W, that's more of, the frustration, just, again, with myself. I feel like it's a couple of plays I could have had back. Now, if those plays would have changed the game or not, I don't know that. But still, with stuff like that for me, is I want to try to get, and make every play, every opportunity that I have.
And how many questions for Andy Dalton about Justin Fields today? What's his level of annoyance?
Well, let's take a listen to Andy Dalton.
We have obviously had plays for him last week. And
talking about
Fields. There's times where he's coming in. Sometimes you're just waiting on the next play, and then he calls it. So, I didn't think it affected my rhythm at all. I was able to kind of hop right back in there and just continue out there.
Is it hard to come out, especially when you're in the red zone like that? Did it feel weird at all?
When we did it in the red zone, the second time we got down and Justin scored. So, we're trying to score touchdowns. So that's, at the end of the day, that's what we're trying to do.
A little smile in his voice there towards the end. Well, I'm glad it didn't throw off his rhythm. I will say that's something that I'm not concerned about, is Andy Dalton's rhythm.
Yeah.
And here's why. He's supposed to be the guy that is not rattled by those kinds of things.
Right.
Well, he's the veteran. That's why you got him.
Right. So screw his
rhythm.
Right.
Do what you want to do.
He passed the test in terms of dealing with putting up with it, and which has to be, it has to suck. I mean, he's not going to say that, but you get the team down to the red zone, and then hey, let's bring in somebody else to actually get the glory.
Yeah. So, Marcus, thanks for coming in.
Bye, Matt.
Love to see you.
Yep.
It is 670 The Score at Spieg Solo on Parkins and Spiegel. Some Matt Nagy thoughts as it relates to every coach I've ever seen with the Bears. Next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.